Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes.
On today's Mountain Grapevine radio program, we have with us on the telephone Whit Jones. Whit is president of the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Association. He's also a crop consultant for Cottle Farms in Faison, North Carolina. So, Whit, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chuck. Good to be here.
Why don't you start off by telling our radio listeners a little bit about you, where you came from, what kind of experience you've got, and how did that lead into what you're doing today, and certainly as president of the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Association?
Sure, Chuck. Of course, I've worked with Muscadines for over 30 years now. Started Cooperative Extension Service back in 82 and retired with Extension in 09. Spent the last 20 years of my career in Duplin County. Duplin County is the home of the world's largest muscadine winery, Duplin Winery. And so I spent the last 20 years of my career working with their commercial grape growers. I grew up on a farm, graduated NC State in 82 and went straight with Extension. And in the process of working with these muscadine grapes, I stumbled onto the fact that they were such a superfruit and an underutilized superfruit because the world really don't know what they are. And it all happened about 12 years ago. These three doctors from Winston-Salem moved into Duplin County to make powder out of the skins of these muscadine grapes. They got set up at Duplin Winery to get their skins and seed after the grapes were pressed for the wine to make powder out of the skins. I didn't think there was much to it. I thought they were trying to divine the market for something that they were throwing away. My family has a farm just across the road from where these doctors set up shop to make this powder. And my father found out they were working with muscadine grapes, and every time he'd see somebody over there, he would go over there and start talking to them. And as soon as they started making powder, they gave him a gallon Ziploc bag full of this powder. And being I worked with the grape growers and kind of helped them get lined up to get their grape seeds and skins, that wanted to know if I wanted some powder. I said, you know, I told him no, that I just watched my dad. He was taking the powder, and it went along for about 6 months, and I happened to be over at my parents' house one Saturday morning drinking coffee with them. And Daddy, who is now 90 years old, Daddy said, I want to show you something. He stood up, and he turned around, and he crossed his arms behind his back. And he said, I haven't been able to do that for years. And my mom said, yes, I've had to put his belt through his back belt loop for years. Said his little aches and pains were gone, and a couple of things he was having problems with and hadn't told anybody about, said there were no longer problems. Got me interested in it, so I went to the doctor and told him, give me a bag of the powder. And so they gave me a gallon of Ziploc bag. I started taking this powder. And of course, during high school, I tore cartilage in my rotator cuff pitching a baseball before they had pitch counts at the time. And I did a lot of pruning over the years. I grew Christmas trees for 20 years. And I had a couple of fingers that had looked like arthritis coming on them and not hurt or even rub it. So I started taking the powder. And it took about 3 or 4 months. And of course, I sleep on my right side. And my shoulder would, take about 5-10 minutes to get it loosened up in the morning, nothing serious. But during Christmas tree season, my shoulder would ache like a toothache. After about 3 or 4 months, I'd get up out of bed, and I'd say, well, dog, my shoulder doesn't hurt anymore. And the knots on my fingers that hurt, even rub them, I could pump them, and they wouldn't hurt. Then when I went through Christmas tree season, didn't even feel my shoulder. I said, well, whatever this powder's got, you know, it works. So I started researching it. And, of course, the doctors were giving me information on just what the powders had as a analyze their powder after they would make it. The muscadine grapes are very high in pretty powerful anti-inflammatory antioxidants, like resveratrol, ellagic acid, quercetin, anthocyanins, and a number of others. They were of the opinion that it was a synergistic effect that these antioxidants had, one working with the other, rather than, say, resveratrol as a standalone or ellagic acid as a standalone. They thought that the synergistic effect was when you combine them all, they work more efficiently. That's what really sold me on the fact that this was a true superfruit. Recently, these facts are bearing out research that they're doing. There have been very few clinical trials. You cannot say that muscadine grapes will help cure a disease, but there are studies now being implemented on these powders and extracts on, say, prostate cancer and breast cancer. So maybe in the future we'll be able to make these statements a little more clearly. This is a crop that the world really don't know about. been to a couple of PMA meetings, which are Produce Marketing Association meetings, one in Atlanta, one in Orlando, Florida. In Muscadine, great country, this is where products are displayed from all over the country, all over the world, and to line up products with buyers. And these are professional produce buyers. And I found out that 90% of the professional produce buyers have never even heard of Muscadine grapes. That's where I have started with the Muscadine grape, but really have been sold on this crop for the last 10 or 12 years, where I saw just what it would do and what potential it might have to impact health. That's why I'm very sold on this crop.
Well, that's quite a story, Whit. I have to tell you that we've known for many, many years that there's some health benefits derived from consuming these grapes and certainly drinking some of the wine and some of the other byproducts that are made from these grapes.
The Native Indians used to use it as a medicinal fruit, so they knew about it long ago.
Well, as you know, out here in the mountains, we have these muscadine grapes that we grow here that we found growing natively, the only cold-hardy variety. We named them the Catua muscadines. And we're just now getting a bunch of the local natural food product people to take a look at making some special elixirs and tinctures and so forth using some of the derivatives that come from the grapes. So, as you know, we've got King Bio out in this part of the country that does some similar things to what your group out there is doing. It's an exciting time to be in the muscadine business.
I think as time goes on, the world's going to find out more about it. We realize that the muscadine grapes are much higher in antioxidants than other grapes. Say Vitis vinifera, which is the French, European, California-type grape, like Thompson seedless and some of the vinifera wines that people are more familiar with, as well as Vitis labrusca, which is the Concord-type grape that they grow in the Northeast. Muscadines, which is Vitis rotundifolia, is so high in antioxidants because it evolved in the South where it's hot and humid, where disease pressure is so high that these other grapes don't survive very well. And that's how the muscadines defend itself from disease, is by producing these high levels of antioxidants. These evolved with such a high level of antioxidants because of the environment that they evolved in.
Well, we've also noticed out here that these cold hardy varieties, these things are disease resistant beyond belief. I have them growing in the same row with a couple other Native American grapes and some Vitis vinifera, and the black rot here and the downy mildew every summer just takes those other grapes right down to the ground. And right side by side in the same row, at the end of the row, we've got a couple of muscadines growing, and they're green and they're healthy and not a black speck on the leaves. It's just astounding how resistant these native grapes are to diseases. So I'm not surprised at all that there's some health benefits that people don't even know yet. Let's talk about your role as president of the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Association. Tell our radio audience exactly what that is and how we work and so forth.
The organization started out as an educational organization, mostly emphasized on cultural practices, on how to grow the grape. Still, there's a lot of research needs to be done in that area as well. But what I want to focus on and emphasize is the promotion of this grape. As I said, the public don't really know what muscadine grapes are. They don't know the health benefits that it could present in their diet, particularly the buyers. Right now, like I said, we sell to all the chains, Harris Teeter, Lowe's, Food Line, Walmart, Fresh Market Muscadines. And with every pallet, we have to send a picture of what each variety looks like, because there are many varieties of muscadines, and each one of them looks a little different than the other. And when the buyers get them at D.C., they need a picture because they really have never dealt with them a whole lot and don't know what each one is supposed to look like as far as how to put a grade on them. The association, I think we need to get a promotional effort out to educate the public and the buyers of muscadine grape products just what this crop is and what it can mean to the public, health in their diet.
Sure. I understand that North Carolina Muscadine Grape Association also has some close relationships with the North Carolina Wine Growers Association. Maybe you want to explain that to some of our listeners.
Wine and Grape Council, we have five on the vinifera wine grape side and five on the muscadine grape side. And of course it deals with wine, and vinifera, their main product is wine. But with muscadines, there are many other products other than wine that muscadine grapes offer. And so we work to promote wine and grapes. But muscadine wine is different than the vinifera wine. You know, muscadine wines tend to be sweet rather than dry, like the vinifera wines. It's a different wine. But again, the Wine and Grape Council are in the business of helping to promote wine as well as grapes, and I hope we get more into the grape products of muscadines offered, because muscadine that great. You know, we've got not only the wine, but we've got the non-alcoholic juice, jams, jellies, the nutraceuticals, the seed powder, the skin powders, as well as cosmetics that are being made with the seed oil from Mustang grapes, and whole fruit smoothies. I mean, there are many products and other products that can be produced from Mustang grapes. We're doing a puree, a Mustang grape puree, where we puree the whole grape, seed, skin, pulp, and can use that in food products like pie filling, yogurts, popsicles, baby food. There's going to be a lot of things that we're going to be able to do with Mustangs that at present are not being done with a vinifera grape.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit about some of the different things that I know that's been brought up in conversations here. For example, when you're growing muscadines out in your region, what kind of a spray regimen do you use?
Depending on if you're looking at a processing crop, say the variety like Carlos that's mostly used for juice and wine versus a fresh market grape. Processing grapes, you can get by with a lot more defects in the fruit as far as blemishes and things. So the spray regimen on a processing crop wouldn't be as intense as, say, for a fresh market crop. Fresh market crop, you know, when you put it in the clamshell, put it on the shelf, it's got to be visually perfect. So we are a little more intense on our fresh market varieties as far as fungicides and insecticides. The first spray that we make on Mustangs is at that fifth or sixth leaf stage. The shoots will be about 6 inches long. The Mustangs at that third leaf will produce its first flower cluster. And they come on well before it actually blooms. So those flower clusters need to be protected. And we'll put a fungicide on about the fifth to sixth leaf stage. We'll try to let the majority of the leaves come on, the shoots come on that'll have that flower cluster out that'll need protection. So, again, the third leaf will have that flower cluster opposite the leaf on the shoot. And so that's when we make our first application of fungicide to help protect those flower blossoms. Now, we're just starting, the shoots are coming out, and we're in the process of almost making our first fungicide spray here in the east. But our flower blossoms are out, flower buds are out now, but they won't actually bloom until about the last week of May. I consider here in the east, I feel the last week of May is first bloom, first week of June is full bloom, second week of June is post-bloom. Over about a three-week period is when their blooms actually open and get pollinated. So, but our first spray will come on at that fifth or sixth leaf stage. Shoots will be about 5-6 inches long. And then we'll go every couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, depending on the weather. We'll step it up 2 weeks if we're getting rain. We'll stretch it out 3 weeks, maybe a month if we're dry. But we'll adjust our spray program as far as how many sprays we make depending on the weather. The wetter it is, the more you have to spray. And insect-wise, which is a permethrin, it's got a one-day wait on it as far as post-harvest. But the first thing you'll run into would be Japanese beetles and stink bugs. Mustang might actually get both those. Say seven, you know, it'll get Japanese beetle, but it won't get a stink bug. So I like the Mustang Max. We'll make a couple of sprays during the summer for those. Like I say, the first one, then we time it. I like to time that spray just before bloom, say mid-May, to take out the stink bugs. Stink bugs have that piercing mouth part, and they'll sting those little flower buds and grapes and make a premature drop as they pollinate and swell. You'll get fruit drop if those if stink bugs are heavy. And also the Japanese beetle. Now, Mustangs can take a lot of foliar feeding. We'll make that first spray for stink bug, and it'll take out those early Japanese beetles that'll come in. I don't like to spray during the 3 weeks of bloom, 3-4 weeks of bloom. So I'll make that spray just ahead of bloom, about mid-May, here in the east. And then we'll do our fungicides after fruit set. We usually make one more spray with Mustang Max before harvest for June beetles. The June beetles will come out and feed on fruit. They start getting ripe, you know, and wasp and yellow jackets. We handpick our fresh market Mustangs, and so we are concerned with wasps and yellow jackets stinging the pickers. So we usually make a spray before harvest with Mustang Max just to clean them up, June beetles and wasps and yellow jackets. And wasps and yellow jackets are considered predatory and beneficial insects, but if you've ever seen somebody have an allergic reaction to a bee sting, a wasp or yellow jacket sting, you'll know that you don't want that to happen in the field.
That's a serious thing. We've seen it here in the mountains. Absolutely. Whit, that's a lot of interesting information to take in. Let's take a break at this point in time, and folks, hang on. We'll be right back.
Today's program is brought to you by Hank Crossington's Motivational DVD. Most folks outside Madison County don't know that we have a famous inventor in our midst named Hank Crossington. Hank went to trade school in Raleigh about 30 years ago, where he learned all about mechanical devices like small engines, vacuum pumps, and compressors. After Hank earned his certificate, he moved back home to live with his mom and younger sister. Their old log home sits right on the Delaware Creek next to Possum Hollow in Sandy Mush. Hank was developing his invention and getting teased by his sister each time he tried and failed with his invention. So Hank decided to film his many attempts in case he ever became famous. He found an old video camera at the junk store in downtown Marshall. Hank's sister would hang out around Delaware Creek and wait for Hank to fire up his latest modification of his underwater contraption. Each time Hank turned on his motorized device, it would cough, sputter, go bangety-bang, and stop with a burst of bubbles gurgling from the bottom of Delaware Creek. But Hank persisted for several summers until he finally succeeded with his invention. He was so proud of his invention that he asked his mom and younger sister to come down by the creek to witness his final triumph in action. When he started up his device, it crawled around the bottom of Delaware Creek, carefully sucking up silt and mud from between the smooth rocks that covered the bottom. Hank's contraption captured the creek bottom gunk in a filter he had made out of old sheets and moss before returning the filtered water back into the creek. Hank's sister began laughing as he was demonstrating his invention to her and his mom. "Look," she yelled, "Crossington washing the Delaware." City folks may not know his name, but they sure know his invention. Hank was the inventor of the swimming pool vacuum pump that is used all over the world. Hank and his mom now live in a small mansion he built near Hot Springs. His sister still lives in their old log home near Possum Hollow. Hank just couldn't take any more of her gaff. Hank had his video recordings of his many attempts and final success with his invention made into a motivational DVD so folks could watch it and get inspired to persevere in pursuit of their dream. You can hear his sister laughing in the background of each attempt and her final pun about Crossington washing the Delaware during his successful product demonstration to his mom. Hank Crossington's Motivational DV is another special product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy a Hank Crossington's Motivational DVD today at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Mountain Grapevine Radio program here in Marshall, North Carolina. We've been talking on the phone today with Whit Jones, the president of the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Association, and also crop consultant for Cottle Farms out in Faison, North Carolina. Whit, let's talk just a bit about how you plant your muscadines a little differently there from what we've been doing in the mountains. And I want to sort of have our listeners hear about this and what the experience has been and justification for making the planting offset in the fields.
Yes. Back 20 or 30 years ago, we would always plant the vine directly between the post being 20 feet apart, and you plant the vine 10 feet from the post, right in the middle between the two posts. But what you will get there, if you do that, over time, that wire gets a little slack, that vine gets very heavy, and the trunk will bow out in the middle. It's apt to get hit by the tractors and equipment as you're mowing and things, doing maintenance between the rows. So what we have started doing the last 10, 15 years is planting that vine about 15 inches from the post in line right under the wire, single wire. And then we put a bamboo reed beside the vine and we'll zip tie it to the wire and train that vine up the bamboo.
Whit, one of the things that we find a little interesting about how you do the training out east compared to what we've been doing here in the mountains is how you take care of the training process for your muscadines and the difference between the leaves and the little canes or suckers, as you call them, going up to the wire. Tell us how that works out your way.
Well, it's very important to train this vine properly the first year and into the second year as well. But the first year is very important as you train that young shoot up the reed to the wire. What you want to do is visit that vine every 2 to 3 weeks and keep those suckers broken out. And by sucker, I mean that little shoot that breaks where the leaf actually is, where the leaf joins the stem on the main trunk up of the young vine. Just like you would tobacco, if you've ever suckered tobacco, you keep that leaf on the trunk, on the stem, But you break the little chute that's coming out, break it off, and just where all the energy is directed to the terminal up the reed. If you strip the leaf off, that leaf is generating energy for that plant, and the plant is expending no energy to maintain that leaf. It's exactly the opposite. The leaf is actually providing energy to the plant. But what really saps the energy out of that plant is let that shoot grow. And up your way, you might be more familiar with tomatoes. We do tomatoes the same way as you sucker those tomatoes. Break that shoot out, but leave the leaf. If you strip that leaf, it'll stunt that plant. So you want to leave those leaves on the stem all the way up to the wire. And once you top that plant and start running the shoots down the wire, that first year you want to keep those leaves maintained on the trunk all the way from the ground to the top, but keep the suckers broken out. If you strip the leaves and sucker and all off that young stem, and some will leave just the top three or four leaves next to the terminal, it'll take you two or three times as long to get that that plant up and down the wire. Just stunts it. Just leave the leaves, break the suckers. And as you approach the wire, that top foot below the wire, you want to leave those suckers until you know which two that you're going to take down the wires. You'll sucker it all the way up to about a foot of the wire, and once the vine reaches the wire, then you'll top it out 9 inches below that wire and take two of those shoots. One of the shoots run one way, another shoot and run the other way. So as you approach the wire, you want to be less aggressive with suckering until you get your two shoots picked out that you're going to run down the wires. Cordon, or the shoot that you take over the post, over the top of the post, will enable that post to help support that trunk and keep it straight.
What happens with, I mean, I'm just trying to visualize this in my own vineyard here. So we've got, we have short rows here. We've got 200 foot rows because it's steep and the contours. But so we've got an end post. And what you're saying is we plant one of the vines 15 inches from the end post. So I can see one of the cordons running out, you know, so many feet in the other direction. But what about the one that goes down to the bracing?
We'll run it right down to the brace. We've got our end post canted at 45 degrees away from the on the inside of the end post, and then the arm that goes up over that post, we'll just run it right down the wire to the brace.
If we take a look at a standard vineyard, then out your way, you have the same number of vines in the rows that we have here. It's one every 20 feet in the row, right?
Exactly.
The one vine that's closest to the actual end, you're actually using the brace wire or the brace support system there to run that down.
We'll put one right beside on the inside of the last vertical post.
Yep.
On the end post, the last vertical post in the row, we'll put it on the 15 inches on the inside of that post. And when we get to the wire, we'll cut it back and we'll run that runner over that end post and then down the wire to the brace.
So you're using a single wire and post system there.
Yes.
And when you have your anchoring system, what's your anchors you're using there?
We use a 7-8 inch post, and it's buried at about a 45 degree angle away from the vineyard for a brace post. And of course, we drill a hole through that post and run a wire vise or wire lock through the hole and run the wire through the hole.
Yep.
And through the wire lock, and that locks the wire in place.
Okay, so you've got about, 3 or 4 feet of post down in the ground and just about a foot sticking up?
We use 8-foot posts, and we've got about 3.5 to 4 feet sticking out, so we've got about 4 foot buried in the ground.
Okay, and how long are your rows typically there?
Well, they'll vary. We've got rows as short as, 100 feet. We've got some rows with just 4 or 5 vines in it.
Sure.
we've also got rows with 50 vines in it, so it varies. It varies depending on the layout of the field.
Okay, so 50 vines times 20 is 1,000 feet?
That's right.
Wow. You know, the longest row we can get out here in the mountains is about 200 feet. It's just...
So we've got some of those just depending on the field. We've got some large fields that we got them in, and we try to run it as long as we can. But that's as long as I would certainly want to run. They're a little longer than I really prefer, just because as we pick, getting them out of the field, hand-picking, that presents some problem. But, we can run that far, but I would rather see them more like, 500, 600, 700 feet as the longest row. But we do have some with 50 vines.
Yeah. Well, when we've got a 200-foot row out here, that represents 10 plants, and a full harvest, we've probably got 50 to 80 pounds of fruit per vine. That's still 500, 600, 700 pounds on one wire. That's a lot.
That's a lot of weight. And that's why we put that vine close to the post, because that weight will make that wire sag over time, and that trunk will bow out in the rope, and it gets clipped by tractors and equipment and bush hogs, you know, as you're going through maintaining that vineyard.
Yeah, you're using high tensile wire. What, 12 gauge?
I know we use 9 gauge.
9 gauge, wow.
I have seen some 12.5 high tensile used, but I prefer the 9 gauge just because it's a little heavier, and corrosion, I think it will last longer. Even though the tensile strength on the 12.5 gauge is just as high as the 9 gauge. The 9 gauge is a little harder to work with, but I feel like it's when you're looking at a vineyard that's going to be there 25 plus years, so I want a heavy wire that can take corrosion and last.
Yeah.
So we use 9 gauge. We use 9 gauge.
Well, out here in the mountains, because of our rows are short, we've got some people using 14 and most people using 12. I've seen some 10 gauge stuff going in, or 10.5, I guess. But
yeah. 12 gauge wire has got just as high tensile strength as a 9 gauge. And we use 12.5 gauge on our blackberries trellising. For our grape, we use 9.
Well, Whit, one last quick question for you on the processing stuff. Does anybody out there have a system or a method for separating the seeds from the rest of the pulp and skins?
Yes. The ones that make the powder out of the skins, they go through and separate the seeds from the skins. And there's some nutraceutical companies that are using just the seeds.
So how are they doing that?
That is kind of a proprietary process that they use. But they partially dry it, and they've got a way of separating it out once they get it partially dry. They don't like to show everybody exactly how they do that. But they do have methods to separate those seeds from the skin before they dry it down and make powder out of it. And the seeds, you know, the seeds are higher in antioxidants than the skin, but it's a little different profile of antioxidants the skins have versus the seed. So, but the skins are much higher than you know, the pulp and juice certainly have them, but the skins are higher than the pulp and the juice, and the seeds are higher than the skin. And if you look at it, the leaves are higher than anything. The leaves are the most times. I'd like to look into how to incorporate that into some of these, let's say the whole fruit smoothie, incorporate some of the leaves to really jack up the antioxidants.
Okay. Well, folks, we've been talking on the phone today with Whit Jones, president of the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Association and crop consultant for Cottle Farms out in Facing, North Carolina. Learn a lot of interesting stuff out there. We may be able to apply some of this to our grapes here in the mountains. Whit, thank you for taking time to be with us today. We really, really appreciate your taking time to share with us some of the things going on out your way.
Well, Chuck, I appreciate the opportunity. I always like to have the opportunity to talk about Mustang grapes.
I hardly pass up a chance to do that myself. Whit, thanks again. Take care, and hope you're having a really good season out there in eastern North Carolina.
Thank you, Chuck, and I hope you do the same.
Okay, folks, we'll call that a wrap for today's program.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!